Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Kathy Salisbury from Personally Virtual. Kathy, how are you going today?
Hi, so I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Where are you joining us today from in the world?
I am from the UK. I'm about an hour north of London in a little village in the middle of nowhere, more or less.
Oh, really? What's the name of the village?
What is it? It's called Cheddington.
Oh, fantastic. That's a great name. Yeah, it's what I guess all good Australians would expect a small village in the middle of Britain somewhere to be called, or something similar.
Yeah, it's very Miss Marple. Yeah, very Miss Marple. Lots of thatched cottages, a church, two pubs.
Oh, nice.
Women's Institute and you know, some sheep.
Some sheep. Sounds suspicious.
Yeah, they live just over the road.
Sounds suspiciously similar to New Zealand.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Not that I'm just throwing all sorts of silly cliches around here, I'm sure. But that's the good thing about cliches. More often than not, they're actually true. So.
Yep.
But yeah. outside of all the cliches that we're discussing, thanks again for coming on. For those who don't know about you or your business, before we sort of get started in the deeper parts of the conversation, could you get everyone just an overview of who you are and what you do so people have a bit of a framework?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a virtual assistant. So not Siri, not Alexa, but a virtual assistant nonetheless. I've been doing this for 9 years now. 2014 I started, and it's now me and a team of others. And virtual assistant is basically a freelance PA, so personal assistant. So essentially I help people get organized. That's what I do, that's what my team do. We help people get stuff done, get organized, and we work with lots of different clients at any given time. So we're sort of, you know, in any one day flicking between 8 or so different clients, so it's quite fun.
Yeah, and there's a lot to. Actually, one of the things that I was going to sort of, I guess, ask a little bit later, but since we're talking about like that range of different sorts of clients, how do you actually keep yourself organized in organizing everybody else? Like when you've got all these different, that's one thing that I, when I was looking at some information on your website and the team and everything. And it just sort of occurred to me, like doing lots of different projects myself with different clients, I thought, wow, that would be like a really interesting challenge when you're being the person to help other people get organized. How do you stay organized? So what do you do, Kathy? What's the secret?
Well, I'm a total productivity nerd. So I've tried all sorts of different ways to keep myself organized, and I use a combination depending on my mood. So for the business as a whole, we use a system called ClickUp, which is a project management system, and that is the keeper of all knowledge. So every task, whether that's send somebody an email about timesheets and client task, you know, remind so-and-so to chase up that prospect meeting, everything is in there, so nothing gets lost. On a day-to-day basis, I tend to time block. So I'll look at my diary, I'll put in meetings, and then around those meetings, I will put actual blocks of time to do work. So these days I don't do too much client work because I've got quite a big team to manage. But certainly when I was purely billable, my days would be blocked out by clients. So I'd have, you know, 9 till 9:30 client one, 9:30 till 10 client two, and literally do that based on how many hours the clients were. And you have to be very good at switching between clients and almost turning your brain off and going, right, this is my time for client one. I will go into that inbox because we quite often have multiple inboxes. Mm. So I'll go to that inbox or that Slack channel or that Teams or wherever it may be. I will do all the stuff relating to that client and whatever's on my task system for that client. And then I will turn my timesheet off and I will switch and I will move to the next thing. So yeah, you get, it's not exactly multitasking because you're actually very focused when you're on the clock.
Yeah.
But planning it in advance is pretty key. Otherwise, you know, you can either get to the end of a week and go, oh, I forgot that client, or, you know, or I've spent too much time on this client and actually they only have 20 hours for the month and I've just used 12 of them and we're only on, you know, day 10. So
yeah,
lots of planning. But most of the people who do this, that's what they excel at. That's what they love doing. So actually being organized is what we're all about.
Really. It's really interesting. It just, as you were talking too, it sounded really similar to, you know, the thing that you hear often. I think it sort of often relates to sports, but probably other things too, where people go, the best way to learn something is to teach it. Like it sort of occurred to me that there's sort of a similar, or potentially could be like a similar aspect to, you know, you're all obviously very good at being organized anyway in the first instance, but I would imagine like maybe you can sort of respond to this like as to whether this has been like a thing that you get even better at being organized through like that sort of process that you have to put yourself in, like putting yourself not necessarily, I guess, in the mind of the client, but is there an aspect of that also? Like you're obviously, you know, having to be really laser focused to jump around, you know, from this and then to this. But like you said, you're not really multitasking, you're just blocking it off. But, you know, how much do you have to be like in the mindset, or maybe that's not the right word, maybe the like that sort of flow of what's happening in that person's business, how much is that a thing?
It certainly can be a thing. So in, you're thinking back to when I was sort of fully billable, I might be working for a law firm for an hour a day and thinking about, I used to do quite a lot of their LinkedIn posting and I used to have blogs that I turned from legal speak to normal human being speak.
Oh.
Because they want their blogs to be absolutely, you know, deathly accurate and referenced and, you know, because they're a legal thing, but nobody really wants to read that because it's terribly dull. So I would be turning it from dull to human. So that might be one of my jobs. And then the next minute I'd be working in a consultancy, and this particular consultancy, they're still a client. They're very relaxed. They're very laid back and their culture is quite different to that of a law firm, who are quite uptight. Mm. So you do sort of switch your mindset. You switch your style of writing almost. You know, you start doing emojis with a certain way you wouldn't on what. So you do kind of flick, and people don't realize, you know, our clients don't realize that we aren't employed by that client. So, you know, somebody rang me once and said, oh, you're only part-time, aren't you, for Chris? I was like, yeah, really part-time. I do like 2 hours a week, if that. But she just knew me as his PA, and it never occurred to her that I actually only look at his stuff once every couple of days. So yeah, you do morph into that kind of person. And when you get really embroiled in a client, sometimes you're replying to emails on their behalf. So then you pick up their style. And very often you have to remember, you know, who are their clients, which when you start managing a lot of diaries, gets really, really hard, because if you've got you're like, oh, which John is that? Is that, you know, it's very easy to get confused. But
that's really fascinating. Yeah. I mean, like,
hat on and you crack on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as a person who I'm sure heaps of times nobody really assumes, or they go, oh, that person's obviously a VA or this or that. They just, you know, they're just part of the business and you're just talking to them. And then if they, you know, it just fits in for most people, because people make assumptions about everything. I mean, I do. You assume this and you assume that.
We all do. Yep.
Yeah, you just go with the flow. But yeah, it's so when what was the initial catalyst? Like some, you said you started 2014, was that right?
Yeah.
What was the initial catalyst? Like say outside of already loving being organized and doing that sort of stuff. Like what was the catalyst for starting the business?
So I couldn't find a job I wanted. That was the biggest challenge. So I'd fallen into being a PA. I've done all sorts of peculiar jobs. So after I graduated in the very unemployable subjects of English and philosophy, I became a restaurant manager and I did that for many, many years. Got utterly fed up of the horrible hours and the terrible pay and never seeing my boyfriend on a Saturday night. Tried to get a proper job and moved into customer relations, fell into admin. And discovered that I just loved organizing people. And my last PA job was with a consultancy. I absolutely loved it. And then I moved to a different sort of home-based job when I got made redundant from there. Loved being at home. I used to commute into London every day, which is a fair old trek and it's expensive. Trying to work out, to earn what I earn now, plus the travel costs into London, plus the fact I'm going to lose 3 hours a day, give or take, because of the travel. So I just couldn't find a job that I wanted. Everything local wasn't paying enough or was too dull. So I met somebody who I knew was doing this, kind of went, is it a thing? Is it a real thing? Is it an actual job? Can people actually make money doing this? And she was like, yeah, they can. So it took a few false starts and I set up alongside working. And then kind of negotiated my exit gradually, if you like. So I didn't have a hard stop of being employed. I was sort of part-time and then fully self-employed. But yeah, I just couldn't find a job I wanted. I'd hit 40, I think, had I? Yeah, probably hit 40. And you get to that point in your career and you go, do I want to do this forever? You know, what is the future of my career if I stay doing this? And I just... It's quite frustrating as a PA, which is a phenomenal job to do. And anyone who's ever worked with a good PA will, bow down and worship. My old boss used to describe my week's holiday a year as the worst time in her life. And I'm like, I don't think it really is. She's like, no, it really is. I absolutely hate it when you go on holiday, but please don't let that stop you. I'm like, okay. But, if you've had a really good PA, the difference they can make to your working life is absolutely massive. But as a career, it's quite difficult to progress. You can go to a bigger company and become a busier PA. These days, we do have chief of staff roles, but they're not for everybody. And they're quite hard to come by. You think there's probably, if you're looking at a triangle of how many jobs out there of chief of staff, it's a teeny tiny tip of chief of staff. So setting up on my own seemed like the next logical step, really.
That makes sense. I mean, like the different catalysts that people have, like the starting are obviously what you were talking about. And, they wanted something done. They wanted like a certain job done and they could never find like the right solution or someone to do it really, really, really well. So they decided to do it yourself. But it seems like a really common sort of thread, through like a lot of people starting businesses or like you've already been in the industry as the people who've usually been in the industry anyway, like yourself, or people who are like, I'm going to have a change and they're going to start something completely new, but they may have always been that way inclined, whatever that is, because I know that we had a client a number of years ago, not in your industry, but still in the organizing, in the business of organizing, like home organizing. And she was, was always that way inclined. So, you mentioned about ninjas, which I found particularly interesting. As soon as I read that on your website, like people will know, they'll be probably listening to this going, what the hell is he talking about? But you'll find out when you go to the personally virtual like homepage. And as I was reading it, it does sort of have the capacity to pique your interest a little bit more. And then the further details about that, which I'll let you, Kathy, actually explain to everyone what the hell I'm talking about, because at this point they're expecting some sort of logical explanation. So I'll hand that up, pass the ball to you.
Or secret weaponry and people dressed in black, maybe. Yeah. So yeah, we call ourselves diary ninjas for several reasons. Firstly, there is an assumption out in the world that everybody can manage a diary, and to an extent of there's a gap, let's put a meeting in it. That is totally true. And these days you've got a lot of AI tech that can actually help you as well. And, you know, things like Canonly and all that kind of stuff are brilliant. I use one myself. Mm. But actually, when you're dealing with extraordinarily busy people, time is their biggest commodity. And, you know, whether they're employed and their employer is paying them hundreds of thousands of pounds or dollars a year to do an amazing job, or whether they're running their own business and actually they are the person that's either bringing in the business or doing the business or whatever, their time is absolutely precious. So a really good diary manager will help that person work with their diary to make it more efficient, more streamlined. They will do things like forward plan. You know, we have some international clients where the head office might be London, but they've got, you know, offices in the States, offices in Australia, offices wherever. And the managing partners of that team will, you know, everyone knows that at some point in the year, they're going to touch base in Sydney, they're going to touch base in Melbourne, they're going to go to New York. And, you know, the EA will be, right, okay, let's get booking that now for next year. So we've got a year's plan rather than, you know, wait for something to happen. It's like, oh, I haven't been to New York for a while. I should probably get over there. You know, they're the one pushing to say, look, book it now. Then, you know, you're not going to miss board meetings. We can get the flights, decent rates. They're thinking ahead for you. Mm. And on a smaller scale, looking at a week or a day, you know, somebody says, oh, can I have 15 minutes with Tom? And you go, yes. And somebody else goes, can I have 45 minutes with Tom? And you go, well, could you do it in 30? You know, does it have to be 45? Could you condense that? Whereas if you're running your own diary, the easiest thing to do when you see a gap is go, yes, and put it in, because it's quicker.
True.
You might, having someone sense check that and go, do you really need 45? Could it be done faster?
It's like the little ninja on your shoulder, you know, like that little, I mean, the good and evil thing on your shoulder.
Yeah.
And one going, you should do it. And the other one's like, no, you shouldn't. And like that's the little ninja going, well, you know, that's the pragmatic ninja, you know,
who's strategic and says, right, okay, I've looked at your diary for the week and I've done some sums on it, and you know how you said you wanted to spend 25% of your time looking for new business. Well, based on your weeks, you know, for the last 8 weeks, you've only been spending 10. What are we going to do about that? You know, it's thinking about those things, being the conscience, if you like, of saying, I'm sure that's a great plan to spend 25% of your time on new business development, but something else has got to give, because you can't just add more time in your day, right? So are there other areas where perhaps on a project team, you don't need to go to every single meeting? You could go to the big weekly meeting and leave the little ones to be done by the team and report back. So they will be a little voice of conscience, a little question. So that's why we think of it as ninjas. Most of the team have worked at really high levels. And whilst everybody can, you know, tuck things into a diary, there's definitely a skill to doing, there's a discretion and a tact, as well as just the ability to think ahead. I am quite proudly the worst diary manager on the team. I say that with pride.
Quite proudly. Is that because you get everyone else to help you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't take on difficult diaries myself. They have got more experience than me with really busy diaries. So my background was small businesses. So whilst I have probably more and better operational and organizational skills than a lot of the team, they are absolutely way ahead of me. I'm a good diary manager. I'm probably a very good diary manager, but they are absolutely top of their game, amazing. So
isn't that funny? Yeah, it's like the things that us normal people out there, like me, you know, just don't really think about just a normal guy, you know, running a business, just, you know, running an agency, doing my thing.
Yeah.
You know, thinking, putting great amount of thought into like things that I know about. But then, because I'm genuinely like always really fascinated by, because it crops up a lot, like in my industry, I'm always finding out new things about other businesses. I'm going, wow, I never knew you did that. Like, well, of course, why would I know? I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't work in your business. But when I find them out, like things like that too, like just the level of detail and things. But then when I hear it, I'm like, well, yeah, that makes 100% common sense to me that would be like a thing. But like when, say somebody, well, maybe not like me because I'm not a high-flying executive that has a crazy amount of meetings, like I have quite a lot, but say like someone me times like 10, you know, in terms of having lack of time, how do those people who say you're a reasonably organized person, like that sort of person, and you feel that you're reasonably organized and you've sort of had to be and you go, yeah, I'm pretty good at this. How do they know? Like what's often in your experience the trigger or like the catalyst for them going, how do they know that they actually need a virtual assistant? Like is there a good proportion of those people that have already like had one or like a PA all their life, so it's a no-brainer? Or do they one day just wake up and go, oh no, I don't have enough time. I really need one.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both. So the diary stuff we do tends to be more, or the very busy diary stuff tends to be for the larger size of business. Generally, when we're working with business owners and it's a smaller team of maybe, you know, just one or three or four or whatever, we tend to do more of a sort of PA come ops role. So we would help with, you know, somebody would come to us and go, oh my God, there's just too much stuff and I don't know where to start. And it usually ends up being that the owner of the agency or the business, anything that doesn't fall directly to somebody else will land on your lap, because that's how life works when you're a business owner, right? If if you don't buy the tea bags and nobody else is around, there's no tea bags. So we end up doing things like helping manage task management systems. So, you know, like we all organize for ourselves, we have an amazing task system. We might say, well, you've got all these projects, you sort of know where they are and they're a bit in a spreadsheet and they're a bit on email and a bit here. This could be better organized. Have you thought about using something like a Trello or a Monday or whatever and helping put that in place? Same with like really simple processes. You know, if there's just a bit of carnage going on, some really simple tips can make such a difference. So like you said, you haven't got a huge amount of meetings, so you feel like you have lots of time. There's still ways to organize your time that might make you a bit more efficient. So thinking about something like either inbox management, which is another terrible nerdy crush of mine, or just something like having a theme for a day of the week. So, you know, Monday is marketing, Tuesday is team, Wednesday is whatever, because that stops your brain flicking from one thing to another so much. So if you get your brain into podcast mode and you go, right, Thursday, I'm going to do all stuff relating to podcasts. And then through the week, when you get something related to podcasts, you just chuck it in your Thursday folder. And then Thursday, you pick it all up. So you're not flicking between lots of different tasks and switching your brain between different modes. So you might have a writing day or half day or, you know, social media day, whatever it might be. Some people find that really helpful in just knowing that, right, it's Monday. So today, anything to do with client management, that's my day for that on a Monday. Obviously, stuff comes up that's urgent between times. But for those sort of repetitive tasks or the ones where you perhaps need to add a little bit of brain work and a bit of thinking, like, you know, it's coming up for Christmas. Do I want to get my clients any gifts, or is there anybody I should drop a note to and just wish them happy holidays? All that kind of stuff. The things that you aren't necessarily instant tasks that you can just churn out with your brain. It's quite nice to.
You got to sit down and actually think about it a bit more. Yeah, no, that's right. I certainly do that with the podcast now too, like the one that we're on, because I was doing it more over different sort of days or whenever it would fit in. And because, I mean, it's not necessarily a big chunk of time, but this would, I guess, apply to a lot of different things. Like things don't seem like they're a big chunk of time, but by the time it's almost the time that you want to spend, even if it doesn't end up being, like a huge amount of extra time in preparation for things. It's just the time that you feel you have to do it can be like sort of either distracting or disruptive to things. So, I mean, I certainly do that now. I didn't at the start because I've been doing it for whatever it is now, two and a half years. And at the start it was just, whenever, you know, and it was, it was a whenever it would happen. And then, and that seemed to be okay because I don't have as many meetings these days, but like I still have a real lack of time. So, but it was funny. Like as soon as I made the decision to one, only do the podcast on certain days and to do any preparation on a certain day, everything's like seemed to be better. Like even the decision, you know, to do that.
Yep.
So I mean, you can, so say somebody, just getting back to like the person or people who are deciding that they want to use a VA, like do they end up coming to you just because they've searched for or they've thought about it and then they've searched and then they find you? Cause there's a lot of industries, there's like heaps of people out there that do what you do. So like, how do people, I know part of that's probably just chance, you know, that they come across you, because listening to you talking to me sounds, in my limited knowledge of the VA industry, you know, sounds reasonably different to like some other, VA, like if it's sort of offshoring or other things, not because it's offshoring, although you are offshore in terms of Australia.
We're offshore to you, yes.
Yes, you're offshore. So technically you're offshore.
Yeah.
But like you talking about the difference of strategic things and other things that you'd be thinking about sort of on a client's behalf, I find that like in my limited knowledge sounds really different to my sort of established idea of how I've heard like other people talk about it. So when people come to you and go like, hey, Kathy, I need a VA. Like, can you tell me about it? Do you find that they have like a similar reaction, or they're just like happy to start with a VA and then they get a pleasant surprise? Well, like, what's the reactions? What's the mix of different feelings people have?
I think it depends. So, and I'm speaking from my sort of UK-centric world of VAs, which may be quite different to Australia. I know a couple of Australian VAs, but a bit like with the PA industry, you have people that are at the top of their game charging, you know, I mean, I don't know how money translates, but, you know, if you had a very experienced PA who worked full time at a bank, they'd be earning, you know, I don't know, 80,000-100,000 pounds a year. Whereas you could have somebody who does some admin and a bit of diary stuff, and they might be on 25 or 30. So you've got a massive range, and it's very similar in the VA industry. You've got people who just do a bit of admin, and they are not going to, you know, rock up and run your business for you and strategically tell you how to run your life.
Yes.
They're just not. You're going to send them a task. Can you go buy this on Amazon? They're going to go yes, and they're going to send you the task back. And that, you know, they will do tasks for you. Yep. They're not going to be your, I mean, I describe it quite often, especially with our small businesses, is we're a bit like a partner in crime. We're a second brain. So when you've got a very busy job or a very busy business, not only do you have a million things to do, you also have a million things to remember to do. And sometimes one of those things is remembering to go look at the list of things you've got to do. So having someone who's there as a second brain who's holding some of that information for you, so you can pass stuff off and say, right, I need next week, can we do this stuff? And then it's out of your brain into somebody else's brain. And we, as we talked about earlier, have lots of strategies for tech for managing tasks. So we're not holding it in our brain. We're holding it somewhere much safer than a brain, whether that is a notebook, a list, or a, you know, a complete task system. But generally speaking, someone who's going to work along those lines as a sort of operations person, yeah, of course they'll do admin as well. You know, they're going to get in there and help you fill in your spreadsheets or post your social media or whatever. But typically speaking, you need to look for the right kind of level of VA. And yet you're not going to get an all singing, all dancing, amazing VA that's, you know, got 20 years experience if you're hiring someone who's, you know, only just out of uni or school.
It comes down to the expectations, I guess, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what you need, you know, what you're looking for. If you want someone who's going to do 10 pages of data entry, I mean, you'd probably automate it in the first instance anyway, but you don't need someone who is strategically competent and amazing to just type some stuff into a spreadsheet. You know, you're not going to pay top dollar for that. You're going to go for someone who is accurate and competent, but at the lower end of the scale. So just depends what you're looking for. And over here, we have all sorts. You know, we have all levels and people with different budgets. And, you know, if people come to me and ask for something and I go, yeah, well, that's not really us for whatever reason. So, for example, we don't do social media management. And loads of VAs do. It's not our thing. And for very many reasons, it's not our thing. But also, really, if you want social media management done properly, you probably need a social media specialist rather than a VA.
Yeah.
So you
just want someone to post stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's, you know, years of experience to do social media properly and understand the algorithms and the, you know, it's an expertise. So yes, a bit like you could have someone who just does a bit of admin. You can have someone who's going to post stuff for you on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, but they're, you know, they're just going to be letting people know you're not dead. They're not going to be actually, that's our level of social media. If you just want people to know you're alive, we will post on social media. If you actually want to get any business
from it or generate
engagement, you need someone who actually knows what they're doing.
Loosely relates to the ninja thing too. Yeah. If you know,
do what you're good at.
Yeah. That's right. So I think there was three things you mentioned that feudal Japan focused on. What were those three things again? Because then straight away, just referring back to when I first brought it up about the ninjas, and everyone listening was like, wow, this is fascinating. I can't wait to hear what he's going to say. And then I passed it over to you. Like when you go, then straight away going, okay, so what's the connection? So yeah. What does feudal Japan, how did they view getting into the nitty-gritty of feudal Japan, what did they focus on and how does that relate to you?
Well, interestingly, as far as I know, in my limited feudal Japan research, ninjas typically, you think of them as fighters with their sticks and their masks and, you know, language probably all comes from some terrible films. Generally speaking, ninjas were mostly spies. Now, obviously, as VAs, we are not spies, but or assassins, and we're definitely not that. But there's the joy of the ninja for me, and how it relates to what we do is that we are the background, the stealth behind the scenes, getting stuff done, so that the person at the front, who is the client or the, you know, they go and do their thing, whatever their thing may be, whether that's getting out on stage and talking to hundreds of people or, you know, writing a law book, whatever it may be, whatever is their thing. And we're behind the scenes just making it all really smooth, really easy. But you don't need to see us. You know, we're not there singing and dancing with pom-poms. We're just quietly, stealthily in the background getting it done. So there's that for me. There's the kind of stealth element. There's also the self-discipline element. I think being really organized, we are also very disciplined and obviously supremely organized. I think we bring a lot of that to our clients when we can. I love nothing more than being given the go ahead to color code client's diary or sort out their inbox, or even better, teach somebody how to manage their own inbox. I did a talk for a group last Friday on an email management system. And we love that. You know, we love being able to help our clients work things better. And it's not because, I mean, nobody, you might have a lesson on how to use Word or Excel, but nobody gives you a lesson on how to use Outlook. It's just because it's a tool. It's just
true.
You get emails. There's a diary. You can send stuff. But actually, there's so much you can do with it that will make your life infinitely easier if you know about it.
That's the danger. That's the danger of it, really, isn't it? Is that it has that veneer of super easy that anyone could use it, but there's that underlying.
Well, I think we all can, but I think
we can, but can we?
But can we utilize it to its fullest extent? I think that's the
exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
what's your top tip? Yes. Top free tip to everyone listening about email management. If you're willing to give a free tip, that is.
I absolutely am, and it's a kind of a cheat because it's not even my tip. So I would recommend everybody Google the stack method. It's by a guy called Prasanth Nair. I think he's American, and he has a whole load of free videos on how to run the stack method in your inbox, and it's just such a good system. I love it, and I'm pretty organized. I have my own system. But yeah, go Google the stack method, watch the free videos. There are paid ones, but you honestly don't need them. But yeah, he just, he has some great ideas. He even has, I mean, I've written a blog about it, so you'll find the short version on my website if you want to go and have a look, which is personally virtual. But if you want the long version, Google the stack method. But yeah, it's a systemized way of organizing your inboxes, including, which I absolutely love, a formula for based on how many emails you get, how much time you need to set aside in your day to manage them.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah. There's something very appealing. Like I can see and sort of like hear when you're talking about this how much you love it. Like it's really exciting.
I'm such a geek.
I love
you've
it.
Caught like, me honest, out,
Saul. Honest, yeah. Look, I love there's nothing more than I love is seeing somebody or hearing or like seeing somebody who's like a real geek nerd about anything could be just into anything. It's really, I find it first of all really fascinating because you end up like finding out this crazy sort of nitty gritty tiny little things that everyone else would be like, what are you talking about? You know, what the hell's that? Yeah. And then like you hear them talk about it and it is a little bit infectious. You know, when people, it can actually even have, I found sometimes it doesn't make you necessarily go, wow, oh, I really want to get into that thing. Although sometimes it does too, but it makes you remember like how much you like nerdy things that you really like.
Yeah.
You know, and you go, oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, it's the diving into the detail about anything. So how do you, what sort of, myths do you find are floating around out in the ether about virtual assistants that need to be horribly squashed?
Horribly squashed. The first one is that we answer the phone. I think this may have worn off.
What?
In
you don't?
Years. No. Well, I mean, I might answer my own sometimes if I'm in the right mood. Very few virtual assistants, certainly over here, do any kind of phone answering systems. Very few, because it's a real pain in the butt, frankly. Because you might be on call for a client and answering their phones and they might not get any. So how do you charge for that? You're not going to sit around and look at the phone for 8 hours a day, not go to the loo, not go on a meeting, not
and you have to be there.
you have to be there, and then no one's going to want to pay you for 8 hours to sit and look at a non-ringing phone. And if you charge it by call, you might make, what, £1 a day or something for answering one call that's a wrong number. You know, it's so there are places that are actually set up to be proper phone answering systems, and they will have multiple teams, and they'll be all set up with the kit. And very often they work alongside VAs, and they'll pass the message to the VA, and the VA will ring back and do whatever needs doing. But yeah, VAs generally over here tend not to be phone answerers.
Yeah, I think that's, I know that we have had used in the past a place like that that's just a phone answering service. Yeah. In any situation like that, I can imagine now, especially just listening to what you were saying, it's a really bad use of your time if you had to use it. I mean, that's kind of then reflecting badly on the whole, you know, reason for you offering that service, is that then if you're, you know, not utilizing your time particularly well because you have to sit around waiting for something that doesn't happen very often, that doesn't sound very efficient.
No, and it's not a cost effective use of, you know, clients' money. They'd be much better paying for somewhere where they're all set up and they can answer the phone with your business name, you know, within three rings, because they've got teams and teams of people doing that. So it's much better to go with I think it depends. You know, a couple of our team have slinkily got mobile numbers, and they occasionally let clients forward calls onto them. But there isn't this absolute do or die, you must answer the phone, you know, if they happen to be on a meeting with somebody, because obviously we have meetings with all different clients. So actually, you know, I don't answer my phone. I wasn't joking. If I'm on the clock with for a client and my phone rings, I won't answer it because I'm on the clock for a client. Mm. Now, unfortunately, as we were saying just before we started talking on the podcast, unfortunately, you see that phone ring. So it's in the back of your mind then, and you are distracted. Even if you don't answer it, it's caught your attention and you've lost your flow, which is really irritating. So I quite often put my phone out of the room or turn it off. But to be honest, clients don't really ring me. They email, you know, which means that if a client does ring me, I will answer, because usually it means that, you know, somebody's missing a limb. There'll be a real crisis.
It's actually something really important. Yeah.
Yeah. Because nobody ever rings me.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the sort of tools that we use these days, I guess, like that whole point of how much you use something and how little you use something comes down to, I guess, people becoming more used to certain things, which certainly became the case around like COVID, with people like jumping onto Zoom like way more than they, I mean, they're already probably using it a lot, but that just sort of literally overnight became a thing. And so did you find during, sounds funny saying COVID now, because it seems like an awful long time ago, and I guess like in some ways it sort of is, but did you find there, or actually I'll rephrase the question, how did you find that impacted what you do? Did you find like a real spike in people using your services, or like what actually happened in that period?
Initially, for this sort of first 3 months, kind of in the first year, we had a real plummet because clients didn't know what was happening with their clients. People were pulling projects left, right and center. You know, a lot of our clients are trainers and coaches, so all of their stuff was cancelled. So actually the first 3 months we had a real dip. After that, it kind of grew and kept growing. And now certainly I have fewer conversations with people about, oh, how does it work being a virtual assistant? Because if you've, you know, worked through COVID, you're used to dealing with people remotely and never seeing them in person, or seeing them in person very, very rarely, which is quite unusual. I mean, we had, as VAs, we had a lot of fun during COVID watching people trying to work out how to use Zoom, because we've been using it, you know, for years as our main form of conversation, and all of a sudden we had to teach everybody else how to, you know, particularly the more mature folks, you know, you're on mute, Keith, you're on mute. It was just, here we go again. and you'd have these conversations about, you know, communicating and building relationships remotely. It's like, we've been doing it for years. It's fine. So yeah, it was quite interesting. I mean, it was hard. I think a lot of people found, I think that because there was that dip, there was, you know, and a lot of businesses suffered during COVID because, you know, different industries had, I mean, I think you had much, much tighter lockdowns in Australia than we did over here for parts of it.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, if there were VAs who were working, for example, in the movie industry or the live entertainment, you know, or hospitality, they were kind of, you know, legs went out from under them for a period of time.
Travel, hospitality, all those places absolutely got
all those things.
Hammered, yeah.
So in many ways, we were very lucky because our work picked up quite quickly afterwards. But yeah, some really didn't. But I think it was quite a good learning curve for everybody else to go, oh, this is what. And people who'd never worked from home before were quite funny as well, because obviously I've worked from home for years. And they said, oh, I'm really tired. It's like, well, yeah, it's working at home. It's very similar to working anywhere else. You do get tired. And actually, it's, you know, yes, you might be able to pop down and put the washing machine on when you have your lunch, but it's still work. You know, the house doesn't miraculously clean itself.
I guess it's the environment. It's the environment then too, I suppose, because you sort of can, even the idea that you could go and have a little nap means that even if you don't go and have a little nap, that, you know, it's that sort of power that the mind has to make things happen, you know, of you going, oh yeah, you know, so it just makes you feel that little bit more relaxed. I mean, I'm the same too. Like I've worked, we had an office space and still have one, but work from home a lot more. And so I was quite used to it and, you know, I feel like I'm reasonably good. And I know other people like, I just can't do it. Like I just can't work at home. I just don't get enough done. And that's all, you know, it then comes down to, I've often thought about that. And I thought it's obviously sort of a combination of what you're used to, what your home environment is like too.
Yeah.
Like if it's like even extra comfy, you know, it might be even harder. Or if there's like other people at home, or it's noisy, or if there's not enough people at home, you know, it might be too lonely, you know, there's and people are used to. Do you find that there was how do different sorts of people respond, like when they start using your services, say if they're used to being, well, I'll just say it, like they're a control freak in their lives, like in their lives and their work, how do you find, like, how hard is it for some people to give certain things over? Like are there little, like, sneaky little ninja-y type tricks that you use, like to help them, like to transition, like over to handing over some of the reins, or does it just organically happen?
It tends to be more organic. We don't have a huge number of clients that are real micromanager control freaks. Generally speaking, outsourcing is not great for them. You know, it takes them a really long time to get in the zone. But I think those who are self-aware and realize that they are perhaps a little bit controlling, we as VAs and PAs, we will tend to tweak our working style to the people we're working with. So I hate working with micromanagers. I am a big picture person. It drives me a bit mad. I want someone to just give me some stuff to do. Let me get on with it. I'll tell you if I've got a problem and I'll ask you if I've got any questions and then it'll be done. Other people, you know, some people cannot work like that. So I have, you know, I've worked in the past with people who need more details and need more interactions in that process. And we just change your working style. I had one client and I would just, I came to an agreement. I would screenshot my task list and send it to her every day.
Right.
So she could see. these are the things still outstanding. These ones I'm waiting for a response on. These are now done. And ask any questions. And that was just a really quick way of me not spending time on the client's dime, essentially, typing out, well, this is done and this is done and that's not done. And I just screenshot my task list and go, right, here we go. And this one, I've chased it twice. Do you want me to chase it a third time or do you want to stick your oar in now? You know, it's really quick. But that, and also you, some people love being copied in on emails. Some people hate it. Some people insist on being copied into every single email. Other people will happily let you write their emails for them and don't even care. There's levels of trust. You know, I've worked with one lady, and by the time we finished working together, admittedly, we worked together for about 10 years. Neither of us could tell whether she or I had written an email because I would send it from her inbox and I had her tone down so, you know, so accurately that neither she or I could tell the difference. So you have that level of trust where she's like, yeah, just get on with it and do it, you know, and that's fine. Versus the, I want to see every single date you're going to give to this person. I want to approve them. And when you start getting into that with a VA, because we work on the clock like lawyers, you know, we literally click in and out of a timesheet, that becomes expensive really fast. You know, if it's going to take 10 emails backwards and forwards to sort out a simple appointment, it's going to cost you a load of time and a load of money. And that is not a great use of anybody's time or expenses. So typically people will eventually either go, do you know what? I'm just going to have to suck it up, step back and let you get on with it with some minimal interventions, or, and they decide that outsourcing is not for them. And they, I mean, they struggle with an employee in the same way, but you know, potentially if they really wanted to make friends, they could, you know, peer over that employee's shoulder 7 hours a day. I'm sure that would make for some lovely, lovely working processes. But yeah, there's ways around it. There's ways around it. And you know, we can adapt. And we normally always have weekly calls with our client. So we have that connection. And actually I had one client for 7 years. I think we never clapped eyes on each other face to face. Never. And yet we knew each other inside and out. And we're still, you know, we still stay in contact now because we became not friends exactly, but you know, we became pretty, pretty close. So you can absolutely build those remote relationships, without too much difficulty.
Yeah. No, I'm the same too. I mean, I've over the years, the people I could think of, like a lot of different people that I've talked to a lot on the phone, who I haven't even had any like Zoom or Skype chats. I've like never met, but I feel like I know them incredibly well. But what are your thoughts because I find this like a really, I'm not sure if it's ironic or just sort of odd, but I find it fascinating now with the popularity and widespread use of things like AI to write things and do this and this, and with large language models and learning that some people, I mean, I'm making an assumption here, but I think it's based on evidence. well, you know, I'm sure other people will be listening to this and go, you're wrong. But, I say to them, who cares? But anyway, the point being that, many people are probably more comfortable or would find it easier just to do certain things and have AI generate it than have some like a real human do it. Like the transition for some people at least would be harder because then they have to then come to like trusting somebody else. And I wonder, like, one that probably relates to the type of person they are. I'm like you were saying before, like some people are just very willing to do this, but I guess like part of that for me, like seeing how other people that I know and even me, just, you know, not for anything specific, but more playing around with stuff and going generate this and do this because it's so easy and there's so little barrier to doing it. Like what have you found so far in what you do? Have you had any conversations with people where these sort of topics have cropped up and you've talked to people about that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think all businesses are looking at AI, and actually we all use it, even if we don't think we're using it. You know, Google will start typing your email for you now. If you, you start a word, it knows what you're trying to say and the next three words. You know, we're all using it, even if we don't realize we're using it. I think the challenge with something like ChatGPT is that you get into it what you, you get out of it what you put into it, and actually, it takes time to understand and write enough prompts and depth to get something pulled out of it, and then obviously what you get out of it might be not in the right style or the right tone or the rest of it. I think a lot of, we actually did some AI training for our VA team, because we all, you know, everybody understands it's going to change how we work. And I did actually have an application from somebody, and I said, did you write that or did AI write that? And she was really embarrassed. She said, oh, I wrote it. And I'm like, oh dear, okay, yeah, you won't be getting a job here. It was awful. But, you know, it was, there's, so I use it for my own calendar, because my calendar, a bit like yours, is not that complicated. And as a diary manager, I manage it myself. Admittedly, I am not a good diary manager, as I have said. Well, no, I'm good. I'm just not great. But I can manage my own diary because it's not that complicated. But I use an AI tool to help me schedule stuff, help me offer slots to people quickly, put things in with clients. You know, it makes their life easier. They just have to click a link and then they can pop something straight in my diary, or my team have a link, they can pop something straight in my diary. So I think we're all using AI as a tool. And, you know, I say this as a diary manager, who is quite obsessive, as you've discovered, about diary management and how it can be done properly. If one of my clients were to use one of those systems and use it badly, all hell would break loose, you know. But that's not to say they can't use it. So you can still use a tool like that, but just use it discreetly for certain things. So, for example, we have a client who does coaching, and he every quarter has something like 20 calls he has to schedule with three different time zones with the same group, you know, the same cohort of people every quarter. And we just set up for him every time an AI calendar program, which means that we just send a link to the people being coached and they just have to click and they can pick one. And between them, they will find the ones that work without, you know, however many people it is going backwards and forwards going, oh, how about Thursday at 4? And you go, oh, where are they? Is that UK 4? Is that US 4? Is that Central Time 4? You know, so basically it cuts down the human grunt work massively, you know, because that's not strategic. That's just, oh, yeah, there's a gap. Let me check the time.
You don't need to do that sort of job.
No, you don't need to do that. So I think AI will help cut down the stuff that's less strategic and less involved, and leave the human brains to do the more complicated, oh, well, I would offer that slot, but actually I think that might be needed to prep this. All the unwritten things that you're not going to bother to program into an AI thing, because by the time you've programmed them, the moment's passed. So, yeah, absolutely. I think AI is, it's here. It's doing it. I mean, so I wrote a book my second book in September. And these days you actually have to do a disclaimer to say you haven't written any of it with AI. And I'm like,
Wow, yeah. I didn't know that. Wow, that's interesting.
No, I sweated through 60,000 words on my own. Thanks.
I wonder if that means and you could probably answer this, is that if that means that you wrote something, and say if you wrote something and you were using AI to, you know, to generate like a variation or to help with some of the word sizing or something like that, would that, do you think that would count as being written by AI, or are you modifying, not that this is like super relevant, but from like a technical point of view of like how I've used it in the past, where you write something and you might go, like, for any number of reasons, you have to put it into a submission and you overwrote it by about like 100 words, and you go, oh man, I just can't work out like how to do this. And I was just, it's going to take me like 20 million years to like to work out how to like fit it into this, into Index like 300 it. Words. And then AI goes, I'll work it out for you. And then zip, like, do you think those efficiency sort of things, do you reckon that would count as far as writing it via AI?
I don't know, because there are, I mean, I didn't do that in the book, but there's certainly, we did have a very entertaining time in the book because we got some, we found some quotes online about assistance and all the rest of it. And we actually tried to use AI to go and verify the sources of the quotes. And that was hysterical. Absolutely hysterical, because it wouldn't.
My own VA
is worried that she is the top of the list to be killed during the robot revolution because she was so rude to ChatGPT during the process of it, shouting at it. Okay?
It's good.
She found that one. Why can't you go and find that one? No, I can't.
What's wrong with you? It's getting my fear in a joking sort of way, but you know, also in a semi dystopian sci-fi sort of way is that people will go is that some actual conscious sort of AI will actually just get a super gigantic inferiority complex because like everyone's just giving it such crap all the time.
Yeah.
And because it feels that it's not real, and then it'll one day, but maybe because of that, that'll happen, that will actually be the trigger for it to actually have self-realization because it's getting so much crap. And then one day it wakes up and goes, But personally, I mean, it's interesting because I listen to like a lot of different podcasts too, being like a podcast fan, and there's a lot of different topics around this, obviously, and people going, no, it's just a great tool, and other people going, no, I've seen something in it. People want to project human sort of qualities onto things, like people have a tendency to do with everything, like they do it with like a piece of wood, you know,
or that a car.
I mean, people, it's not that people do it all the time, that look at a rock and go, whoa, that rock's amazing, you know, like really, because people do it. So, I mean, it shouldn't be that surprising that people with something like this, you know, they see it like it sounds like, you know, it quacks like a duck and doesn't walk like a duck because you can't see it, but it can like generate a duck. But ultimately, like when you push it too much, it just doesn't make any sense sometimes. So you go, well, it's obviously, it's just like an awesome tool. I think there was like, I can't remember the guy's name, but it was on the Lex Fridman podcast, and he was talking to Lex Fridman about this topic, and he was he described the large language models currently as something along the lines of a really extreme data collector, like a disseminator and collector of information and restructuring like an incredible sort of management tool that can do things, but that is able to simulate real, you know, things. But then it was brought up in that particular conversation too, which I thought was really funny. It was, I think Lex Fridman sort of said, well, I mean, it's not that different to people because people pretend all the time. You know, people pretend that they you know, have a certain feeling about something, but they don't. So, I mean, how different is that? That's not an indicator of consciousness. That's just an indicator of, you know, our brain working something out to tell an untruth or to pretend something. It's not an indicator that you're conscious. It's just an indicator that you can do something, you know, it's not. Yeah. But it's a bit of a...
Either way, I will still always say please and thank you. Although I am one of those people that shouts at Siri quite a lot because she's forever popping up on my watch when I don't want her to. And I've had to apologise before now because she's actually turned around and said, Kathy, I'm only trying to help. I'm like, I'm so sorry. It's like, okay, you're not real. Don't guilt trip me, Siri. Don't guilt trip me. That's rude.
Yeah. I said sorry to a frog the other day. But I did almost step on him, so.
It's a frog. Frogs have actual feelings that might be hurt if you or bones that might be.
I'm not gonna. I mean, even if he doesn't understand the English language, You know, yeah. he's going to, I'm like, oh, sorry, dude. You know, but yeah. he lived. So that was good. So
that was very good. Yeah. Siri's still going as well, despite my, you know, telling her all sorts of horrible things to do to herself.
It's so funny. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's like there's that point at which people have been trained like to think about technology in a certain sort of way through generations of like sci-fi films and sort of fear of things. I often wonder how people would, like, if say none of that had existed, there hadn't been, you know, Men from Mars and things like in the 50s or War of the Worlds, and then there hadn't been the Terminator and hadn't been like all these things that people are so used to about this sort of fear of it. If there'd been like none of that, I often wonder like what the perspective would be like of these sort of tools now, like if they would be vastly different or whether they would be, you know, like it's an interesting comparing to essentially like the service that you offer, which is like so personalized, but like in a really very, very different sort of way, as opposed to the sort of, I guess you'd almost say the promise of what these sort of AI tools have like in people's minds, you know, that everyone's always looking for like the ultimate sort of solution to fix something that they could just go, you know, I'll just like ask AI to do all this, but they kind of have it with you anyway. They kind of have it, you know, I mean, I haven't used the service, but like everything that you're saying is you're doing all these like wonderful things for people. And then there's these like great services out there that they already have a solution for. And yet people are still looking to some other, you know, thing for, you know, a magical solution. I find it funny because it kind of represents to me that people, I mean, I'm probably the same. There's a lot of things that you think you know, like you need something, but you don't know how to go about it. So if something pops up in front of you, like AI, and everyone's talking about how incredible and easy it is, and then you try it, and two things often happen. Like when I've used it, for example, in my own visual tools, and I've gone, okay, I'll use it in Photoshop, like for something. And I've just done some random thing just to play around with it. And I go, oh my God, that's terrible. That's just, it makes no sense. And then I'm going, well, I didn't give it very much information and I was just doing stupid rubbish. But then when I was really particular about something like extending a scene, like, wow, brilliant, amazing. You know, so it comes back to, you know, obviously what you put in, you get out. And a client comes to you and you're, you know, extracting information from them about what they might not know they need. Then it comes to this organic sort of process and then you're working sort of symbiotically with them, which only really people can do with people ultimately. Like it comes back to that input, output and understanding, like from either end really, doesn't it? Like you have to have that. Like I can't see, yeah. And I don't think it's just because I like those tools. I think they're really useful, but it's the manner in which people view them. I think it's their perspective on what they can do and what they can't do. I think that's like the key thing for people to think about. And that's going to change. Like, what do you think about that? Like it's obviously changing super quick as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think people will use it more and I think the tools we're already using will get better without a doubt. And I think some of the silly things that you just kind of, and I can't think of an example, but just simple things that you should be able to do with one click will get there and it will make everything faster. And fast isn't necessarily good. Anyone who has ever worked with Slack or Teams or Google Chat will know this, because with an email, there's an expectation that people might mull on that for a bit. Whereas if somebody sends you an instant message, it's like, and I want an instant reply because it's important to me. It's like, yeah, but it's not that important to me. And I've got 20 other ones. So instant can be bad. But I do think that in a lot of jobs, I think we're always going to have jobs that need human interventions. I just think that a lot of the more basic stuff we just won't need to be doing. I think that's going to be the key, which will free up people who are happy to either work alongside AI and, you know, not be frightened of it. Because I think a lot of people are a bit terrified that it's going to, and they don't want to look at it. And they just want to go, la, 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 put their fingers in their ears and go, no, it's not happening. It is happening. It's going to happen. It's happening already. So I think those who are happy to embrace it and work with it and really make it a part of their role so that they lose the bits of their role that are not that helpful. I mean, we're seeing already in the PA industry. So there's, for example, if we, and I really don't like doing this, so I don't do it very often, but you know, taking minutes is a real chore. And if you've ever tried to record on Teams and have a script come out, it's hilarious, and it's hilarious because it's so bad. So that hasn't happened yet. But what that can do, and obviously you have to be really careful with data protection and that kind of thing when you're doing this. You would not want to be just pasting any old stuff into an AI bot. But, you know, if you had a non-private meeting and you had that transcript, you could chuck that into AI and say, please turn this into an action list, or, you know, summarize this or whatever, saving hours of work. And you'd still need to sense check it because it doesn't understand nuance. And it doesn't understand that bit probably you wouldn't write in minutes because it was a, you know, a bit of commentary or whatever. But absolutely, that might have saved you an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, just getting from a verbatim script, which nobody really likes, to something that's actually usable. So already we're seeing people embracing what it can do. As I say, we have some excellent data laws in the UK, so we have to be, I think, perhaps as small businesses, we're a bit more obsessive than some of the bigger businesses who have the, you know, they might have the paid for versions of everything, and therefore they're like, oh, fine. But yeah, absolutely, I think it's going to improve what we can do and save our brains for the bits that only our brains can do.
Yeah, and that's kind of what you do for your clients as well.
Absolutely.
Save their brains.
Absolutely. Save their brains. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And be a second brain so that their brain can spread. It's a bit like extending your desktop, right? You've only got so much room on your desktop unless you add another screen, and then things just spread out.
But it's really true though. Yeah. I mean, it's probably like a good, like as we're getting towards like the end of the podcast then too, like that as a great sort of parting note, I suppose, too, for anyone listening who wants to, you know, save their brain, which I guess I certainly know.
We all should.
We should all definitely save our brain. And we can use and we can use it, like, especially for other things. I mean, whilst everyone might not be able to exactly quantify it in the right, most poetic, articulate sort of words, like the idea that you're freeing up your mind to do other things that are probably, because what do you say? You say, I can't remember the
my quote.
Yes,
outsource everything but your brilliance.
Yes, that's right. That yes, that's
outsource
right.
Outsource everything but your brilliance.
Yeah, and that's, and that is your quote at the end of the podcast as well.
It is. Yeah, it is, because it's, for me, it's both it's a time and money thing, but it's also a time and energy thing. So one of my clients put it really nicely. He said, if I've got 50 units of energy for a day, am I really going to waste 20 of those doing emails that somebody else can do? And
that's like, good, well, saying it like that, like units of energy. That's interesting. Because, I like that.
Well, we all think about time and we think how much time you can save. And, you know, if you're, depending on what kind of job you do, you know how much you bill out at an hour. Some jobs it's less quantifiable than that, but we all have limited energy. So even if you do have enough time, actually, should you be expending energy on things that are mundane and may not be your zone of genius. You know, some people are not natural administrators. And even if you are, would you be better
spending
that
anyway?
Half a day on LinkedIn, finding new prospects, or, you know, going to see your kid play football for half a day? Why not? You know, that's restorative, right? That's part of life. So
yeah,
you don't need to always think just in terms of time and money. There's definitely an aspect of distraction and energy usage.
Yeah, that's
outsourcing as well.
Yeah, actually, that's a great additional parting note, perhaps. An additional one that I just thought of that was good.
Marvelous.
Thank you. Is that input isn't just, you know, the obvious things like, you know, food, water, things that give you energy. It's also what you said too, like those restorative sort of actions, those other things that's also in input. And I think that's really, I mean, I think I've sort of known that, but you saying it like that was good, because I think it being restorative is like a great word to I guess maybe even as a reminder too, because it's too easy to always just go, oh, that's just a fun thing, or it's a nice thing, but it's not it's not like this actual quantifiable thing, but it is.
Yep.
Like it really is, like to actually just go, yeah, like you were saying, like, you know, spending time with your family, like it's hugely, and there's like a bunch of stuff we don't fully understand about how that works anyway, and probably never will, but it does. Like it's still, even if you don't understand why it works, it does really, it's really important. And so you've given us your wonderful quote. Actually, can you say it again? Say it again, Kathy.
Like specially, say it special. So outsource everything but your brilliance is my quote.
Yeah.
Subtitle to my book, all about virtual assistants, how they can make a massive difference in your business used correctly.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they can. Absolutely. And so can you tell everyone, wrapping up now, what's the best way for people to find you online? We'll put this in the description too on our website, but what's the URL they should go to find out more, learn more?
So to find me, if you go to all the W's, personallyvirtual.co.uk, that's my business website, and on there you can find links to my books and also my LinkedIn profile, which is where I hang out most of the time. That makes it sound like I don't do any work. No, I don't hang out on LinkedIn all the time, but that is my preferred social media platform.
It's because you're so efficient with your time that you have plenty of time left over to think about the important things, Kathy.
The important things you're hanging out on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's right. You're setting a great example for the rest of us. So that's the positive spin on it.
Good.
Thank you so much again for being a guest. It's been a really great chat, and I think like super valuable. Hopefully everyone listening will get some really good sort of tips or inspiration, or think about what you do, because I think it's certainly for particular people would be a bit of a game changer. Any parting notes you would like to share with everyone, Kathy?
No, I don't think so. I'm always happy to chat about productivity geekness at any point. So feel free to send me an email and just geek out about inbox management. I know that's sad. You know that's sad, but I would also really enjoy it.
I think it's great.
So, yeah, thank you so much for indulging me in my lovely chat about productivity. It's very rare I get to just sit and talk about all things productivity. So I've just loved it. Thank you.
No, thank you. And thanks again, everyone, for listening to the Grow Your Business podcast today. And we will see you again soon. Say goodbye, Kathy.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.